closer.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Start this darn show. Hey, everybody, welcome to Two Magicians, One Mic. My name is Nick Paul. That's Robert Ramirez. And today we have one of the bad boys of magic, Eric Siegel.
Wait, I got an intro.
I got a wall.
We have a song for you.
Oh, good.
Do our best to get the very best guess, but today we got Eric.
Eric is a lovely man because he jumped in last minute. We had to push Chipper Lowell to next week because it's Thanksgiving and I forgot to plan it earlier.
And he's got a family and the three of us don't.
Well, I have a family. I don't know about you guys.
I'm looking to actually make a career out of filling in for Chipper and other things too. Like, let's say he's going to be on TV, I'll fill in. You know, he has.
You could do it.
Or like a touring show, I'll fill in. Because he's got a nice career and I feel like there's enough overflow that I might be able to cash in pretty big.
Half of a good portion of his show are just brilliant sight gags. So you could see that steal his material and, you know, minus the juggling and magic skills. Well, you have the magic skills, but
I have the juggling skills.
Got the juggling.
Oh, do you?
I actually would be a really good Chipper Lowell stand-in. Now that I think about it,
you really could.
Maybe I should reach out to him.
You should, because he does. We'll find this out next week. I don't think he's doing virtual shows. So you could pretend. We could green screen him in.
Yeah.
Somehow your face over his.
There's a market right now for Chipper Lowell material, and if he can't do it because he's not doing virtual shows,
I can fill in. You're right. There has been like kind of a void in the industry.
Yeah, there's a market for it.
Gentlemen.
That's good. Anyway, Eric Siegel, how are you? You're one of the bad boys of magic. There's two of you normally, but we didn't call Dan. We just called you.
That's good. Also, I would also like to be introduced. Can you redo the intro, but also call me by my latest stage name?
Yes, I know.
Okay. We're going to redo the intro with his new stage name and Instagram handle.
Okay.
We do our best to get the very best guest, but now we just got the great Thurston.
Thank you very much. Hold for applause.
The great Thurston. Thurston the official, or Eric is Thurston on Instagram. And I just want to clarify, Thurston is spelled T-H-I-R-S-T-I-N. So don't give me any, like, don't send me angry letters, angry emails that I'm just stealing the name of a former famous magician.
Yeah, no, it's not like any famous magicians, like, I don't know, Houdini or someone didn't steal their name from somebody else.
100%. It is, I think magic probably more than all other art forms, it's about stealing, shamelessly.
Sure.
Yeah, there's more stealing in magic than bank robbery.
That is probably true. At least bank robbers come up with their own techniques for robbing banks. I don't think they have like big conventions where they steal each other's techniques.
The bank robber is getting together. Okay, I'm going to go through the back entrance, but you go through the front entrance, but we're all going to wear the same mask.
Have you ever tried coming from the top, though?
Oh, I haven't. Who developed the top method? Let's steal that.
Erdnase
top method. This is inside baseball right now if you're not a magician, but this is some funny stuff. If I could say so myself, we were accused of not throwing shade, but we got a comment saying, a longtime listener, friend of the show, even though we've never met, but, can I read this comment we got? Oh yeah, go ahead, Robert.
No, man, I have met.
Okay. You have met this person.
Yes.
Okay. This is great. This is from Fred K, fan of the show, but this comes off like he hates, Simon. Even though he's a fan of Simon, comes off like he might hate some. Here we go. Fred K. Glad to welcome Robert to the podcast and up my pledge amount. Oh, that's nice. If you're a fan of the podcast, you can up your pledge on Patreon for more than $1 a month if you want to support and like the show. We appreciate that.
Yeah.
I have seen Robert Ramirez perform and lecture on numerous occasions and have always enjoyed talking with him. That's nice. Also, I like how Nick is already stepping forward and leading the discussion again. Now that he's out from behind the huge shadow cast by Simon's head/brain/ego. Smiley face. Smiley. You know it's a joke. One wonders how Simon will fill the void left by no longer having the Two Magicians One Mic platform to publicly throw shade at every non-pro magician out there, as well as some pros too, ? Oh, that's right. By counting his stacks of Magic Puzzle Company money. Just kidding, Simon Cornell. he bought all three, is what he said. He's a big fan, and he bought all three puzzles from Simon. In any event, my therapist assures me that listening to a more positive and less judgmental magic podcast on creativity and performing can only help with the night sweats. Good luck with Two Magicians, One Mic 4.0, question mark. Sorry, I've lost track. Fred K. That's a nice little comment from Fred. Very funny. Fans of the show are writing it.
He's upping his Patreon. That's great. That's very nice.
He did. I got the notification that he upped it. So if you're a patron already and want to give us more money, please do, because this is very time consuming and exhausting on my part. And the more money we make, the more we can disperse to our guests and co-hosts.
And we'll start
which right now is nothing.
I'll start writing more music for the show because the value will get higher.
I will add that into the Patreon. If you donate a certain amount of money, say right now, I think the most you can donate is like $10 to $20 a month. It starts at like $1 and goes up. But if you donate $20 a month, Robert will write a song for you.
Yeah. 100%.
How does that sound?
Yeah. That sounds great.
Great.
And
okay, good.
By the way, guys,
I'll get all the money will go to Robert. So don't worry.
I want to thank you guys for bringing me on as your permanent additional host. And I'm also looking forward to many, many, many. Wait.
You're going to get lots of texts. Hey, the guest had to push up, Eric. Can you come back on again?
You know, that the thing about the night sweats in that in that message, I think that might be more correlation and less causation. Like, I don't think it's from listening to negative magic podcasts that he's getting these night sweats. I think it's just correlation. If you are the kind of person that listens to magic podcasts to begin with, odds are you are also the kind of person who gets night sweats.
I think that's fair. Yeah,
I want to say, though, I'm very impressed right now, because if we were doing long form improv, I would be laughing so hard that Eric got out of that monologist speech night sweats.
That's what my scene would be about 30 minutes later.
Speaking of night sweats,
in about 45 minutes, if you don't call back night sweats, I'm going to be very angry.
What can I say? I was trained in Chicago on the mean streets of the improv circuit.
Eric and I have that in common. You're also a Second City studying person. Did you do conservatory?
No, I never paid as an adult for classes at Second City. I was in the teen ensemble when I was a teenager, which required an audition.
I'm glad you were.
I'm
glad you did that while you were a teen, though. I was going to be really concerned that you said you did the teen program.
I did the teen ensemble when I was 35, which I probably could. If they didn't know who I was, I still look. You know, I can pass for...
Yeah.
19. I get that all the time at work right now because all the seasonal people, like, we barely get any hours. We barely see anybody, but we start seeing the same people. So finally, like, people start talking during lunch, and multiple times these guys are like, yeah, so I just graduated from Burbank High School and I football team of all. And they tell me these long stories, multiple stories of like, they're just out of high school. And then I have to go, yeah, I remember when I was graduated high school in 2005. How old are you?
Oh, that's rough.
What did you do so I don't do it?
Oh man, it's been fun.
It's fun, but no, you have a Robert has a product out exclusively at the Magic Apple. So like you're still in the magic world. You're just making some extra bucks at the Best Buy right now because it's seasonal.
It's seasonal and it's actually quite fun. I had this thing during work yesterday that it made me think I have to remind Nick, I got to talk about this and I can't remember, but I kind of,
good.
I vaguely
speaking
remember,
of memory from last week.
I know. I vaguely remember what it was about. I think it was the idea that that's what it was. So yesterday, all I did at Best Buy was, you know, those like large 18 wheeler trailers that you usually see with like Walmart stickers or Best Buy that move product. So we unloaded an entire truck into our warehouse. And when you do that, you basically have to unload it and then separate it into its categories of like, photography, home speakers, appliances, blah, blah, blah. So that took like 4 hours. And there was like six guys. It took us 4 hours to empty that truck. And then after that, we had to open all the boxes and then move them to their secondary like categories. And then from there, then you have to put them on the floor.
This is riveting so far, Robert.
So riveting. But what I say is, there was like, that was my 8 hour shift, was just doing that one task, which was get items off the truck and onto the floor. And I had realized like by the time we had opened all the boxes and I was like finished moving everything, I felt so accomplished that like the one goal for the whole day was just to do that. Like, yes, like, you know, in 2 days they're going to get another truck and they're going to have to do it all over again. But it's like why Best Buy was less stressful than performing is I feel like performing every trick is its own little like 8 hour shift. where it may fail and not work. So like out of 8 hours at the end, I can look back and go, that truck's now empty and there's nothing in the warehouse because it's now all on the floor. But in magic or in just any performing, it felt so stressful sometimes when you'd like, you're like, okay, I have to do 10 tricks, which is like 10 little versions of that. And sometimes I don't get to the end of those. Sometimes they're not complete tricks. Sometimes they don't end right. And I feel like that's where like sometimes I feel more stressed in performing because of that. That it's like I have to do these
totally
tasks by myself.
And there's nothing tangible at the end to like point to and be like, look, I did something. It's just kind of like ethereal. Like I did it. It's over.
It's not like it's done. I guess the only thing that's done is like the show's over, but it doesn't necessarily mean like the trick's finished. Themselves.
You also told me that you like doing that back of house stuff just because it's like, and I get like, so that you're not on the floor, so that people aren't constantly like bothering you.
Yes, I literally, okay, if you're listening to this and you go to a retail store and you walk past an employee that's holding a dolly that has four large boxes that are taller than the person holding the dolly, do not ask them where something is.
It's like when my dad, every time I go out to dinner, without fail, he will ask the busboy for like another Coke or, you know, silverware or something. I'm like, that is not his job. That is not what he's doing right now. And you're just complete. And just people have no clue. They just, oh, he works here. That's right.
And that's what they see. They just see, oh, he's got, or the best is I have a Best Buy shirt on. So they come up to me and go, do you work here?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, best, but also, please leave me alone. Like, I have stuff in front of me, obviously.
Yeah.
Have you ever just said, like when you... no, I don't, just like scampered away?
Not yet. I haven't been that annoyed.
It's coming though.
It's
coming.
That balance of like, I enjoy helping people. I like enjoy talking to people, which is like the crappy thing about like why I don't like being on the floor. Because sometimes like I like rather do a task. And when I'm in the warehouse or like doing mindless stuff, it's kind of easier. But I also enjoy like talking to people, especially if they're nice and they know exactly what they want. They just need to know where it is, or, hey, I have a question between these two things. And if I can help them, great. But it's like when I have no idea what they're talking about, and then I have to pretend that I know what they're talking about. Because like, it's so weird. Like they have specialists for different things. So like if you want a camera, not everyone knows anything about cameras. I definitely don't know anything about anything cameras. And so our camera person just wasn't on the floor. They were probably at lunch. And so I kept telling managers, like, get someone. And they were like, well, just do it. And my head was like, okay. And they're like, so can I change the lighting on the backlighting on the screen when I turn it on? And I was like, yes.
Being in LA would be the worst place to work at a Best Buy and have someone asking you about camera functions. It's like, you probably know more than I do.
I know. And then like the worst, oh God. Yeah. It was just like that all day. And it just made me laugh because I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. Just I want
that happened to me so many times when I worked at Circuit City back in the day. Of just like somebody, do these buttons on the phone light up? Yeah, of course they do. And like this was like when Xbox 360s existed, and they're like, oh, can I play DVDs on this? And I'm like, oh yeah, you definitely can play HD DVDs on it. And then I went home and researched it, and you need like a whole separate attachment. And I will never forget that I told this man who purchased an Xbox 360 that he could do that. You can't. When you walk into a store like that, it's such a massive store. There's so much going on. Like, you can't expect... The training I had for Circuit City was literally, like, 3 days, and I learned nothing.
Right.
I can imagine it's the same thing.
All I learned is where stuff was.
Yeah.
So, like, some products I want to know for myself. So, like, because I bought this new MacBook, like, I did so much research on it. So, like, if someone comes up to me and asks something, like, I'm so excited because I'm like, oh, my goodness, I know exactly the comparison between the Air and this and the new model and the old model. Like, I know everything. But when someone's like, can you get me a Canon Rebel T8i? And I just go,
I can pick up the box.
Yeah, I can get the box for you. That's about it. And bring you in.
I was trying to promote your Asus Front. People can get this at Magic Apple, right? Whoops, and then you went into real work mode.
I know, I did. Yes, they can get it at the Magic Apple.
It's a great, it's rare that I see a video for a trick and I immediately texted you and said, I want one of those, make me one. Because it's just for Zoom shows, I'm like, this is shameless promotion. I'm not making any money off this. And
nope,
I'm sure Magic Apple is making a good chunk of money. So that's great. Well, supporting local businesses, but yeah, it's a great visual trick.
It's great. It's really visual. I did it in Colorado, which was kind of a big audience and surprising.
I forgot you did. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you can see it pretty well. It's kind of, I think the glass I had in Colorado was my old glass, which was foggy and kind of not good, but the glasses we found for the product we're selling is really nice. And even the video, like I just like kind of wiped it down once and it was so clear and I kind of went, oh, this is like a really nice glass that we found. But it comes with all the props. It comes with all the gimmicks. Yeah, it's really great, really easy. What else can I say about it? Yeah.
Where can they get one?
At the Magic Apple, at magicapple.com. Or they can go to the store, call the store. They'll ship it. I think there's free shipping right now during this time, which is really nice.
If they use promo code 2magicians1mike, they will get negative money taken off their order.
Yeah, no.
We really should have set something up with Brent there.
You know, he totally would.
Yeah.
You know what you would do? I know what you do. Right now, it's the introductory price is $30. So because it's only available at the Magic Apple, you can't get it at Murphy's, you can't get it at Vanish King, you can't anywhere. It's only $30. And I think it's going to go up to $40. For retail at that. So I'm sure we'll figure out something later on with
Brent. Did you develop this with Jim Steinmeier? Did I see that on the cover of the book?
So it is in the book, The Magic of Alan Wakeling, which is by Jim Steinmeier. And so people have tried to I won't say names. Companies have tried to get the rights to this trick that, by emailing Jim, and they kind of just said, give this to us. And he went, no. because they wanted to do it for free. They were being really mean about it, and they kind of just said, like, well, we can just rewrite it, like, we can just, like, it's not your, like, it's an old trick. And, like, you really got to be careful with stuff if something is published in a book, is if it's just published at all, you really, there's like, that's really dangerous kind of area. So because it's published in a book, I talked to Jim about it and kind of just said, you know, I think this is something that's really easily marketable. I think people should be doing it right now on virtual shows because it plays so well. It's super easy. Doesn't involve any spectators. It's very visual. It's really great. So I talked to him about it. And he was like, I think that's a really smart idea. It's really good. And I said, you know, I want to work on it and add variations. So like I did a ton of different color changes you'll see in the video. And then I add two bonus routines that have never been published with it, which is really nice. So Jim rewrote the instructions for us, and then you get you get written instructions from Steinmeier, and then you get a video link that has, you know, me performing all of the things and then teaching everything as well.
Once again, use code 2magicians1mike for no money taken off your order. But it's still, that's good to know. It's if you buy it now, it's $10 cheaper than it's going to be at Murphy's or wherever in a couple months.
We think it's going to be 40. It may be 45. We don't know, but we just knew that like 30 at the start for us only having it. We did the same thing with my other product, Live and Let Die. We had an introductory price because it was only at the Apple. And then once we sold it to Murphy's, it went up in price.
Eric, I'm so sorry to bring you on, and we're just shamelessly promoting Robert's stuff, but I wanted to get that out there to support the Magic Apple. It's a great place.
Well, tell you what, I think everyone should purchase that trick, even though I've never seen it and don't know what it is. But now can I just have a retort to the, can I now criticize a trick that I've never seen?
Please.
Yes.
But I would, and this is just totally, I'm just going to throw this out there, and Robert, I would like, or Nick, your honest feedback, but like, do we need another Four Aces trick? here's my thing about magicians, and everyone should buy this because I'm sure that with these two people making it, it's probably amazing and incredible. Look, I'm naive. I haven't been in the magic world as long as you guys, technically, but just so many magicians just learn new tricks rather than perfecting what they already know. Well, what is your honest response to that? Like, is this the best ace trick? You know what I mean? Or is it better than...
What I've learned, what people have taught me, like when I started Magic, I think it's Michael Amar that said it. I feel like more people other than him have said it, but I distinctly remember Amar saying it, is like, learn only three tricks when you start and just perfect those tricks. Like just find three tricks, any three tricks. It does not matter. They could be literally the same, like variations of the same thing. It does not matter. Just do them until like you can do them with your eyes closed, that they're just like easily and natural. Then it's easier to find other things to do. And what I think, what's kind of the problem, the like pros and cons of like magic, new magic coming out every week, is I think it's bad because you just get flooded with like repeat stuff and variations of stuff, and it kind of gets old. But I think what's really nice about having so much material available is that your choices for those three tricks can always, you have such a like array of choices now to make. So I would say this is interesting. Aces Front is interesting because it's like a trick that uses props that don't make it feel kind of like a card trick. But also it's very different because you're using a glass and they're mini cards and you have a silk and they're like really visual changing, that it doesn't feel like a standard card trick, even though it's using cards. And because the deck is small, it kind of automatically makes it more intriguing because of that. So to me, it's a good trick to learn because it is using some principles and an understanding of visual magic. Because the way you have the method, the way the silk moves, and you having to know, I'm gonna stop myself. Like it's that thing where, like, you know, when you're doing magic and you're like, oh, I think the audience knows, like, you get panicked for yourself. Like, the audience knows the method because you can see the method. And like, this is a really good example of it, learning Aces Front, because the change looks different from your perspective than it does from their perspective. And it's like learning what it has to look like from your side in order for it to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a fair point of it.
You're right. And now that I think about it, you did show me this trick. And I do like visual things and not just card things. And this is a visual thing.
Yeah.
Is this the one that you?
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. Yeah. Well, but you know what the thing about it is, that thing, and I don't know if that was your addition to it, that change, it really is better than other tricks like it. So this trick to me makes sense.
But it's also weird because, like, I'm a huge advocate for not if the trick involves the same method multiple times, like, to make it seem like it's not the same method, whether it's through like physically doing something else with it even though the method's the same, or blatantly lying and being like, I know what you're thinking, it's probably like this, so let me do it like this instead. To prove to you it's not that, but all you're doing is the same method. I wish I had a better example of that, but like, I think what's also really nice about this trick is the two tricks I created for it on top of it aren't 4-ace tricks. So there's a 4-ace trick, then there's it's a kind of ambitious card routine where someone picks a card, you wrap it in a rubber band, and then it jumps to the front, even though it's wrapped in a rubber band. And then the other one is a color changing deck. So like it actually is more, which I love about, I love getting magic tricks that you feel like you got more than what you paid for. Like, you're like, this trick's so good, I'm going to get it. And then you're like, oh my goodness, the bonus effects are almost better than the thing I bought it for.
It goes back to what we were saying of the robber convention of, you know, okay, do they get together and also steal? I think that's the importance that people don't realize when they're purchasing a trick. It's so easy just to do it verbatim. But as I was talking with Brent the other day at the Apple, I was just like, I was there looking for stuff that I could put into the show that I'm like, okay, stuff that I can customize for my, even if it's like one little thing that's mine added to the routine. I think if you're not doing that, I do have judgments of that. If you're doing something verbatim without any essence of your own personality, then that, I don't know. I think that's the reason magicians get such a bad rap in the beginning.
It's like, and it's not even just
buying the show.
It's not even just a qualitative thing, like, oh, you're doing that word for word. But it's more just like, wouldn't you, if you take magic seriously and you enjoy performing, wouldn't you want to make it your own in some way? Like, if you're passionate about this, wouldn't you want to, like, improve it and make it work for you?
Balance, though, I think there's this like weird balance, and it comes from like the hobbyists. And a lot of times I've talked to them. It's like they want something that they can just show their friends.
Lots of hobbyists actually listen to the show, so no, let's support the hobbyists.
This is my positive support.
We're not recording.
We're not trying to throw shade. We're just trying to be realistic. Come on, Fred.
They enjoy things that they can show their friends and their coworkers, which is really great. And something that I constantly forget when I'm creating something. Sometimes I just do stuff. My brain set goes, if I need to, you know, steal this card and put it over there, I'm going to do it by any means, whether it's super hard to do or not.
Totally.
And so releasing stuff like that is so difficult because you kind of go, oh yeah, there's not a huge market for people that want to do that. Mm-hmm. Which is why back to Aces Front is so easy to kind of do. But yeah, I think that's what's kind of interesting about the hobbyists is it's more of like they like these little show pieces, which they do verbatim because
And I don't have I honestly don't have judgments over that, especially if you are a hobbyist, because it's the same way when I pick up a guitar, I'm just goofing around and I'm like, oh, this is this thing I just learned. There is no need
unique. We need to listen to two guitarists, one mic, and how they are making fun of us.
Those guys, it's the opposite. Those ladies, and they're much more intelligent than we are.
Yes.
Even something like that, though, Nick, even if you're not like a professional guitar player, if you were going to an open mic to play the guitar, you could at least introduce this, you playing the guitar, with a quick story. Totally. You know, like, yeah, I'm getting back into this here because, you know, COVID happened. I had more time at home.
I think if you're performing publicly in any shape or form, you should be striving to somehow make the trick.
That's right.
Not unique, but put something like you guys in the Bad Boys, or formerly Bad Boys. We don't know the story now. You guys were very good. I directed your show. You were doing stuff. I would say what 80% of the show wasn't original material, but everything you guys did, what the way you did it was original. And that's what I think is so important with especially performing magic, because once again, it gets that bad rap of you can just purchase the show.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people don't really
that's something
think
I've
about
always,
that.
I've always been impressed with the Bad Boys and Eric is like their thinking of magic. Because every time they started a trick, I never knew where it was going, because it was always, they always start it with some crazy premise and then they bring out the prop or whatever. And I go, oh my God, they're doing a variation of such and such. Like, it always made me laugh because I was like, how did you get to that point? Like,
yeah, you go to the darkest point, darkest timeline, and then start from there.
So good.
It is
true,
yeah.
Eric's helped me a lot. I've asked, Eric's given me some ideas to do stuff, and we've gone back and forth a little bit the last couple of weeks. And it's always just so refreshing because I feel like it's the same way, like I said, like, I just want to do the hard slight to accomplish something. And I feel like Eric's brain for coming up with a motivation for a trick, my brain can't do that. Like, once he says it, I go, great, and then I can run with it. But Eric's initial ideas that he gave me, I just kept going like, oh my God, that's so much fun. Like, yes, of course, that's weird and dark.
Thank you. I mean, nothing that we did in the Bad Boys, like, magically, we weren't trying to push anything to the next level because we literally weren't good at magic. But yeah, we didn't steal a single joke or a single premise that was existing. Everything, all the dialogue was totally new.
Yeah.
Chris Angel performing in front of a room of paid actors at a Fogo de Chao is still one of my favorite lines from the show. I would laugh every single time. I saw it directing it, you know, you see it like 30 to 50 times, and it was one of my favorites. There's a lot of great lines that you guys came up with from a comedy perspective, which was wonderful.
Even for people out there, though, like, even if you don't want to write something word for word, like, there are simpler ways to just make something your own. Like, that piano thing that you performed a couple of times, Robert, was just you playing a very difficult piano song, but at least you introduced it as like, this is incredibly difficult, it's the hardest thing, I like just learned this, I'm going to try it. That's enough. I mean, you didn't make up the song, but and someone else could have played it better, perhaps, but it was entertaining. Just because there was a little bit of like truth or like
correct and
something intriguing about it.
It feels like you're experiencing something, and I think that's the hardest part with like cabarets or concerts. Coming from like a musical theater background, and all my friends who definitely don't listen to this podcast,
we'll find out.
Doing cabarets and stuff, and watching it, and almost feeling like, why are you doing this? Like, why did you choose that song? Did you just choose a song because like you can sing it? Like, it's, I think that stuff's so hard. And almost in magic, it comes to that point too, where you just go, well, I'm gonna do this trick because I can do it. So like, why can't I just do this trick? And I feel like it's so hard to justify why you're doing everything. And again, like the Bad Boys and just Eric by yourself, like all the screen stuff you've been doing with Thurston, like it's so smart and well thought out on like why you're doing the carbonate with the clouds or the billiard ball stuff. Like, it all makes sense and is all fun to watch because you feel like you're there in that moment for it because it's like so unique. And I think that's like one of the hardest things to get. To me, that's like my favorite thing of seeing like a really good performer, magician, or anything, is that you feel like for that moment, you got to see that performer do their thing and you were there for it.
Sure. Yeah, and I don't want anybody to think like we're in spots of being experts. Like, I am still, like, I did a virtual show this week and I'm still discovering things, A, that work in that medium, but B, that, you know, like, speaking of overdone tricks, you know, Silk to Egg, a trick I do, I originally did silently, and now I'm like reworking it for Zoom and reworking it in a way where people, I'm like, okay, half of you get to close your eyes halfway through this. I'm going to reveal this trick for half of you. And if you don't want to know, if you don't want Christmas to be ruined, plug your ears, close your eyes. And to me, it was just kind of it's exciting because it's like, oh, it's the same trick everybody does, but hopefully, you know, I feel like it's some sort of new spin and it's exciting for me. Maybe it isn't. Maybe it's not original at all. That concept is not new. That's something Penn and Teller do all the time. But for me, just being able to take something that's done so much, you know, and maybe the most overdone trick in magic, and still find a unique little door to open is really exciting and keeps the show fresh. So yeah. It's not something that ever goes away.
No. What's really nice too, and hopefully Eric, this will inspire you to tell me something later or even something now. It's okay. Like also starting with that plot and then thinking of other tricks that fit it. So like, if I want to do a trick and then expose it, and if you want to see how it works, you can see it. Like, what trick do you do that A, isn't like, I had a discussion with Taylor Hughes about it, is like the trick isn't so amazing that you're actually revealing a quite incredible trick that no one should know how it's done, or, but not revealing like a kind of a crappy trick. They're like, I'll show you how it works. Isn't that kind of cool? Do you know what I mean? Like the Abbott's hole in one, which is the six balls in a circle with a shot glass and a glass on top of it, and you cover it with a silk and they name a color. And then when you take the silk off, the colored ball's sitting on the shot glass while it's covered with another glass. A lot of magicians expose that because it's the mechanics of it is actually really quite interesting. But I think that the trick is so strong that like it's almost a shame to reveal it because it's like too good of a trick. But then if the trick's not good, that concept or that plot line like doesn't work anywhere.
Sure. Yeah.
You're talking about the plot of like the fake out, like I'm going to explain how this works, but then it's no, really like actually
I don't know. It's like that balance. Sometimes like Silk and Egg, you kind of do learn, but then you don't. It's got the
kick. That's what I like about it too. Yeah. It's like, okay, I'm going to show you how this part of it works, but I'm not going to show you how that part of it works. Yeah. And I think if you are going to, at least my philosophy is, if you're going to expose something or pretend to expose something, there should still be a kicker ending or something.
Yeah.
And it's the same with a joke. It's like you set up punchline, relax, and then hit them again. That's kind of because everybody's guard is down. And I think you can get away with a lot more when everybody's guard is down.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. I wouldn't, that billiard ball routine is so good. I wouldn't want to reveal it unless, again, yeah, you come up with a kicker. The only time I remember that working, like just revealing, is when like the trick itself maybe just really was, it was when Penn and Teller, I don't know if you guys have seen this, it was from like an old special, but basically it was some kind of illusion where Teller got in a box and Penn like took where his, and then closed it, and where the head was supposed to be, he took that piece off and put it somewhere else, and then he opened that and his head actually was still there.
Yeah.
And then he put it back and the whole body was there, and when they revealed how that worked, it was like the entire stage was see-through, and Teller was like crawling through the ground to stick his head up just in time. And that was clearly designed just to be revealed. It wasn't that amazing of a trick on its own. Whereas the billiard ball trick was designed to be a trick and is amazing on its own.
Yeah.
And therefore maybe shouldn't be revealed as.
Yeah. Which is, it's strange that magicians just choose, like they think when the method is so interesting, that's will be more interesting than the trick itself. And I think that sometimes there are tricks, like a lot of tenyo tricks are like that, where the trick, it's the mechanics is better than the actual trick. But I still don't think, I don't know, because I love that plot. I love giving the audience an insight into like how cool sometimes the methods of magic can be, that it's not just like I'm palming or I'm doing something that's like sleight of handy, but like when the trick works itself, you just kind of go, isn't this the coolest thing?
Yeah, I got that.
Somebody thought of this. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like, yeah, someone had to test this. Someone had to run through it. It works because science. I mean, science is always kind of an incredible thing. And when science isn't magic, you always just want to be like, this is why it works. Isn't this so cool?
Mm-hmm. Maybe that is it. If it's science or mechanical, it sucks to reveal something where then the audience is going to walk away and be like, oh, all tricks are done with a double lift, like because they don't know anything else. And so they just apply that. But a mechanical trick that's so specific, you're not really revealing anything that's going to hurt the performances of other magicians. No one's going to see the billiard ball thing and see another magician do a card trick and be like, oh, it was a little thing that moved.
The biggest problem with that is that the mechanical trick cost me $400 and the card cost me $498.
Yeah. That might be part of the reason you want to reveal it too. It's like, look at what I paid for.
Yeah. And that's like the crappiest part about it is because like you do feel like, you know, all this money is because of like the engineering and the actual like how it's built and stuff that you want people to see it. But at the same time, you kind of go, it's built like not a lot. No one's going to be doing this. Like not a lot of people do hole in one. I know two or maybe three people that do it. So it's kind of that thing of like, if you expose it, yes, you're not really exposing a trick that everyone's seen, but you're also performing a trick nobody has seen. So like,
I wonder if there's some sort of mentality too with illusionists who were like, look at this big thing. Look at this big thing I bought. Okay. Here's another big thing I bought. And no judgments towards it, but that's its own kind of genre.
Yeah. And we talked about it a little bit last week, just like once you start learning illusions and once you start learning like the coolness, the cool mechanics that work, the science behind it, you kind of get an appreciation and respect for illusionists. And it's something that I hate listening to magicians when they see an illusionist, especially someone that I like, and they just go, yeah, that person's not good. And I just want to be like, they're doing stuff that nobody else is doing. They're like, they're doing really clever stuff and you're just seeing it as this box trick and you're just kind of going, ugh.
But Robert, you are saying that like you like illusionists that like either designed or like not just a guy who just is rich and bought a few illusions and is doing it with his wife.
Correct. Because I think he's buying it because he just thinks it looks cool. But like you'll know the difference between an illusionist who like just bought the trick because they wanted it or someone who was like is in love with the
mechanics
behind it. You just talking to an illusionist, you can immediately figure out like, oh, like you really understand like why these work and like how the interesting like hundreds of years of engineering that still works today. Mm-hmm.
It was fascinating when I worked with Franz. You know, he was only there for 2 weeks out of the 3 months we were in China, but it was neat to hear his perspective on that too because he was very self-aware. He's like, I don't do double lifts, but I create these illusions, you know, and that's how his brain works. And it was fascinating to hear his perspective of, you know, basically coming as an engineer towards magic first. And I don't think a lot of people, you know, realize the importance of that. You know, whatever your opinion is of an illusion show, one way or the other, I think you still have to respect the way you got to that point if you are creating your own, you know, big boxes and big productions and whatnot.
I'm glad you have been going down this road more and more though, Robert, because it's nice to like be like, ooh, it's just nice that I know you and that you're going down that road and that you know that stuff. That to me seems so like out of my understanding and mysterious.
Well, that's how it was for me for a long time. I just didn't understand. I didn't get it. And like even having met Jim Steinmeier like 5 years ago, like it still doesn't click. There's still some things he says that he's just like, oh, that's just Selbit's thing. And I'm just like, and then I have to be like, I don't know what he means by that.
P.T. Selbit?
Yes.
Okay. Is there another one?
No. Well, the Alan Wakening song is basically the P.T. Selbit song, but better. Anyway.
Gotcha.
See, like, that's such a nerdy sentence. That's the
deep
nerdy.
Cut. Deep cut.
Deep cut. So, like, what I love about it, and I kind of learned from theater, from my theater aspect, like, in college, was, like, because I knew other things, I could see how they were helping me in other ways. So, like, teaching myself piano was helping me in theater. Just, like, not just because, like, I can help accompany somebody or, like, learn auditions faster, but, like, my understanding of music grew because of that, which in turn helped just my theater knowledge in general. And like, to me, the sleight of hand knowledge is helping the mechanical side that I don't really know. And I know, you know, 3 years from now, whatever apparatus stuff that I've been working on stuff will apply. I may just go, yeah, I'm just gonna do more sleights. But now I have such a better understanding of like more within magic.
Yeah, I think it's important to just studies. It's with anything. Study as much as you can and learn as many different angles as you can.
With your combi and stuff, like it's the same way. You can tell that for both you, Nick and Eric, like your comic background like comes into play so easily and so seamless because it's so ingrained in your body already that it just you don't have to try to sneak it in. It just applies itself.
Usually when the magic is failing.
Especially
80% of the show.
It is nice to have like any skills outside of the thing.
Yeah.
That you really want to work on. Even for comedians, if you're a history buff and you know, that will make you stand out when you improvise as opposed to other people or, you know, it's nice.
Yeah,
to,
I think I think people are afraid and or don't realize whatever, especially not especially hobbyists, but like anybody that is like a hobbyist or amateur that wants to do this more professionally and like wants to be on stage more, I think they adapt or they, you know, they say the pattern the way it was sold to them because they feel like they have no like connection to it. And I think if they just realize that like no matter what job, if you were an accountant, like Andy Gladwin was a computer tech before he started doing magic professionally. And like, he's got tricks that are like about that or about numbers.
That's right. Jimmy Ichihana was like a math teacher. And his trick is, his like main claim to fame is like an incredible mathematical thing.
Correct. And so I think that people are it's hard to take the time to like understand your background. Even if your background, you feel like has nothing to do with performing, that it's so kind of easy to do it because it automatically makes you, your knowledge of stuff kind of is you, and you can put that into your art.
I mean, Steve Martin says that too in his book. He's like, you're going to use everything.
I was just thinking that. Yeah.
That's why he picked up the banjo. That's why he put in balloon animals. He's like, I need 2 hours of material.
That's why he did magic in his.
That's why he did magic. Yeah. He had an interesting, I heard him talking about this recently, where he put magic at the end of the show for a specific reason. So he's not, you know, labeled that way. And I thought that was very smart. So it's almost like a little bit of a bonus, I think, for the audience.
Yeah, better to, yeah, if you claim to be a magician, you better be great. Yeah. But
the other thing is, I feel like if you watch a show and you did magic, that's like always like a bonus, like, ooh, he does magic too. That's amazing. But if you like at the end of the show, you're like, and now I'm going to show you my recorder skills. No one's like, Andy plays recorder?
Unless it's the funniest recorder bit ever. Although, no, truly, like Andy Kaufman, like he has that bit where he is foreign man and he starts like crying. And it's this really like meta bit, but it ends where he's crying and then his crying becomes rhythmic. And then he walks over to bongos and starts playing them like little drums. And it goes perfectly. And that actually is a like, wow, you are good at that. And that was the capper to this comedy bit.
Yeah.
It adds another like layer of like.
We added that part into some of the audio from that into the episode I just edited for the Brekkie show Other Side, because we contacted Andy Kaufman and I get to watch all these old videos that I hadn't seen of him doing that and finding the right Rob found the right pieces to put in the video. And if you haven't seen it, it's really funny, but it also, it shows like the dude is just, I still don't know where I stand with Andy Kaufman. I don't know if he was a genius or just taking advantage of the audience in some weird way.
Well, he was ahead maybe of his both. Time. I think,
hey, you're yeah, saying
like, at the time, people were more gullible. Like they believed you.
Yeah. And not as many people. They didn't have as much entertainment and they didn't have any visual entertainment in their homes, you know, for the most part, other than television, you know, in limited capacity, a couple channels to flip through. So when you're seeing this guy, you know, mimicking to Mighty Mouse, that's absurd. that's I don't know. But
that's
yeah.
why I kind of like Eric's Thurston stuff right now, because like,
sure,
it feels like a bit. But then like you're doing good magic. And so then it's almost confusing to people who, I don't know if it's that they don't know you or maybe they only know you in like one way or the other. I think it's like so funny. I mean, you probably get
a goal for it to put it on stage.
I don't know yet exactly. It was definitely like, I think it did come from a place of like, you know what? Like we're in lockdown. I'm not doing any shows. Like I do want attention. Because the first thing I posted was like a thirst trap. It was like me in my underwear, but there was like a joke to it. And
yeah.
It is, I think every time someone posts a picture on Instagram, there's almost a joke now, like, oh, you post a cute pic of yourself and say something self-deprecating, or you post a cute pic of yourself and say something about politics. But it's always just like, look, I want to post a cute pic of myself, but there has to be like something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, like I also love magic and love doing like weird meta comedy bits. So that's definitely a part of it, but
that's one of my favorite things. Like, I don't know what I'm going to see. I feel like it being funny is either surprising or the magic is surprising. Like people, they don't know. And I feel like you do such a good job of like watching a video and being like, is this just a bit? Like, is it just a bit or am I going to also be fooled? Or am I just going to be fooled? And then all of a sudden it turns into a bit. And now I'm laughing.
That's good. Yeah. Hopefully a little bit of both. Hopefully sometimes you feel one way, sometimes you feel another.
Yeah. I think it'd be easy to do like a version on stage. Yeah, I think
I'm building towards it, but it is tough because I definitely feel like from a place of like I have no material yet that I can do on stage. But I feel like I'm working towards something and I don't know exactly what it is yet. But
yeah, with character bits for me like that, it's like starting it's really small and like doing like a 5 minutes, not even a five, like one trick on stage. And then like understanding like how you can build this character longer and longer. Mm. I have a Mexican character named Señor Juan Pablo. He started as a bit that like we used to do it for the Astonishing Show, and he'd only come out, he'd only do like 5 minutes. He did like one trick, and I had him before that, and I would only do like one trick. And like the more we did Astonishing Show, I had to understand like how can he last longer on stage where like the like gimmick doesn't go away, because like that's the hardest part about doing something like that. So they have to understand the gimmick really fast, and then it's just got to like. Each trick has to bring up a new thing about that character that mm-hmm. makes it interesting to watch for the next trick.
It's funny you say
you
that.
You can't just be repeating the same thing over and over. It's yeah. a good point.
I have one bit that I think could work live where I'm like a restraint artist, not an escape artist. So basically I throw up a sheet in front of me, and by the time it lands, I'm in
Robert
a
just covered
straight
his face
jacket.
With his hoodie. He's laughing so hard.
So I want to like quick change into a straitjacket, but then that's the end of the bit. I don't escape from it. So then yeah. I just have to be like, all right, thank you. And like waddle off stage.
I think it'd be funny if like you escape from like all of your clothes except the straitjacket or something like that. So there's something still happens at the end.
No.
It is, and I don't know how you would do this, but you would say I'm a restraint artist and I'm going to get into this straitjacket with nobody's help.
That's interesting.
You can do that. You can
you're
do
right. That
I'll
is.
Strap the whole thing, and you get the arms, and you can strap everything. You just get into the.
If you don't steal that, yeah. use that. I'm going to steal that because that's brilliant. For especially if we ever go back to doing cruise ships, like I can't have people come up on stage and get me into a straitjacket.
You're right.
You get inside it, yeah, and then I solve the Rubik's
cube.
Right, that's
I'm
funny.
I'm gonna think of a method. This
time. You can do it. The hardest part would be the crotch strap.
The crotch strap, but it would be the most entertaining.
The arms
moment.
Would be the hardest part.
The whole thing has to be already buckled. Like you can't be buckling it yourself. You have to like somehow get into the thing where it's literally all preset.
I'm imagining
like, or if
one
it's,
of
like,
those
a chain
like,
already set up and you're getting into it. I was saying that you're literally putting it on and then trying to do all the buckles, even though your hands are inside the thing, and then putting your arms around.
Oh, that's funny.
Trying to get the
you should still do
way.
It to a song, to like an intense song. The way people escape mm-hmm. from straitjackets to songs.
You do
what
it
would
to,
be the opposite of like an intense song?
Well, I think say, you do
because you're
to
doing
my,
it in reverse.
You do it to "I Want to Break Free," but you play it backwards. You don't
right
tell the
here,
you don't tell the audience. They just kind of realize you is this "I Want to Break."
Or it's a piano version. Yeah, that's funny.
That's great.
We just wrote your closer. You're welcome.
Thank you guys.
Again, can I just say he did it again? He gave us the craziest premise, which is he wants to be a restraint artist. And then we all three of us just like chimed in with all this information so fast.
Like if you're a performer out there and you don't have a group of people where you can bounce stupid ideas off and
you know,
they won't
you know one of us.
Yeah, feel yeah. free, or just, I think that's so important, because, like, if you were to say, oh, I want to be a restraint artist, and then just write that in your notebook, that's probably going to go nowhere, yeah. unless you do, like, a whole Venn diagram of things.
Very
but
true.
It's so much, see how quickly that came about, but just us, and who knows, that could not work at all. Maybe it probably needs to grow 1,000 other ways, but if you aren't treating your show like a writer's room, you're missing many opportunities, I think, and that's something new. You know, I've stumbled upon in the past, just moving to LA, of so many people doing the same thing. And what about this? Try this. That it helps out immensely.
Can I ask you guys a question that you might know about?
No.
Don't work
yes,
here.
No. I don't work here.
And Robert, having been on a show twice that I've tried to get on, maybe you, or maybe I've asked you this, and maybe you guys don't know exactly, but I have a routine that I'm working on, like with the laptop kind of magic tricks I've been working on, but this is an entire long routine. But I also really want to post it online, especially because I got the rights to this song for a year, the digital rights. I'm wondering like, and the holidays are coming up and I haven't like dropped something in a while. And I've been working on this for like most of this year. I'm excited to share it. If I put it all on Instagram, but then still submitted it to maybe a TV show, are they going to be like, does the TV show want to be the first person to show your... No.
They don't care.
Okay, that's good.
They won't care at all. They'll actually,
because my following's so small, it's like, oh great, 100 people saw that. Like, who cares?
Yeah, I would say that show doesn't care too much about Instagram followers, but like, once I would say the last 3 years, maybe when I was auditioning, people were saying like, casting directors ask how many followers you have.
Oh, as a like the more the better to get on the show thing.
Yeah. Oh, not like, well, not the show you're talking about in particular. Not the show you're talking about. Okay. I'm saying like TV in general.
Oh,
they
would.
They're trying, you know, influential people. So you would audition for, you know, a sitcom, and in your audition they'd say, "Oh, and how many Instagram followers do you have?"
Yeah, it's, my wife has been, you know, doing, because she's an actress and voiceover person, so she has been just trying to grow the Instagram for that reason. And it's such a bummer because it's like, it has nothing to do with the actual
job. It sucks.
Job.
Like, yeah. Now Julius Dean is going to get all our parts. I want to throw shade at someone.
I was in Vegas and Dan was in Vegas at the same time. He like posted on Instagram. I was like, oh my goodness, I'm in Vegas. And he was like, oh, you should come to this like club that's opening. We have an inn. And when we went there, Julius Dean was there.
No.
Performing like on the red carpet. And we didn't see, like, I was like, I think that's Julius Dean. And like, I see him doing stuff. And I was like, I can't with this guy.
Look, Julius Dean, if you're listening to this, I take it back if you plug me on your Instagram channel. You have a huge following.
But block me, also, Julius Dean. Block me.
I wanted to
I don't know. I don't know who he is. So maybe that's the most shade I can throw. I feel like
Jabrizi gets like a bad rap for like, and I'm like, leave him alone. Why isn't anyone picking on Julius Dean? He's doing the exact same, like, you know.
I don't know. That's culture. That is weird.
I don't want to get sued, guys.
No.
I'm saying they're fine people on Mike.
Yes, they're good and I like them. I was all just kidding.
Definitely. You know, I have a big problem with Instagram magic and whatnot. I don't think it translates into real life, but that's my opinion because I'm an old man who started on stage. But the other thing is, I mean, going back to the casting stuff, is like, I interviewed a week or two ago to work as an associate casting producer person for AGT for magic and comedy stuff, and I'm still waiting on that, so I don't know what's going to happen with it. But that did, I mean, that's when we did the interview, I submitted a few people. And they didn't ask about followers, which was kind of nice. But I know that does influence a lot of casting. And hey, if you're a magician out there and wants to do America's Got Talent, send me an email. If you think you'd be good for the show.
Eric's typing so fast all of a sudden.
You're sending an email right now.
It's so weird.
We've been friends for a long time. How much weight do you have? Does it matter if the material is bad? Can you get me on?
This could very well turn into nothing. I'm still on the hold, and I'm sure by saying it out loud, nothing will happen.
But if they were smart, they would give you the gig because you know absolutely everyone. And
well, that's
the job.
That was one of the, some of the stuff they were asking about. I'm like, well, I'd be new at this, but you know, I'm very lucky to know a lot of people, and I'm very lucky that a lot of people who I've reached out to have said, oh, you'd be good at this. So, who knows? And I'm not saying this to plug myself. I'm just saying from just a recent experience going to what you were just talking about with Instagram. But seriously, I am looking for people to submit. So if you're interested, do reach out to me. info@nickpaul.net. info@nickpaul.net is my email.
You know what?
Yeah. I don't know. I cut off both of you for my shameless promotion.
A great little ribbon you put on there.
Say that again.
That was a great little ribbon you put on the show, Nick.
Uh-huh.
It was really nice. We're all going to be able to sleep well tonight and not have any night sweats.
Yay!
Was that a callback, Robert?
Yay!
It was a first callback because there was no way we were getting back to night sweats.
As Eric was typing, I was looking up the name of the... I knew it was Nathaniel something in the Night Sweats, one of my favorite bands, but I couldn't remember his last name. So it's Nathaniel Ratliff in the Night Sweats. I was going to say, hey, speaking of music...
This
but you did it in
beat,
a much
guys.
More efficient way.
Yeah.
This is our third beat, and Robert just brought it full circle back to our opening.
Oh, God. Good job, guys. Good job. See, improv.
Yeah.
Improv is amazing.
Say something and then say it again later.
Quick plug, guys. I'm teaching my improv intensive again. It's $15,000 for 12 weeks in a row.
What is it? You get a cold chicken sandwich.
Yeah.
Yes, cold chicken sandwich just for signing
up. A warm Sprite.
We would joke openly with our teachers that when I finished the Second City Conservatory, you get a red Second City shirt. And I'm like, oh, this is nice. This shirt cost us $2,000 or exactly $5,000, right. Whatever it was. I can't remember. I don't think it was that much money. But I think as long as you know what you're getting into, it's fine.
Yeah. No hate, guys. Love improv.
No hate. We love everybody. We love Instagram.
Julia Sheen, you rule.
We love you. James Dean. Jabrozy. All these people I don't follow because I don't really go on social media.
Jabrozy, if you want to tag me in a video, it's at Eric is Thurston. Just tag me in all the videos.
I want to know if they listen to us because I don't think those type of folks listen to, like, Instagram magicians. I think we have more live.
You know what we mean, Robert.
Wait, don't you dare make that racist. Don't you dare make that racist.
What's the Facebook
I mean, Instagram
guy?
Folks.
There's also that Facebook guy who gets millions of views.
Oh,
doing the same thing, you know, fake reactions and whatever.
Yeah. He put out I'm blanking on the name, but it was a bunch of things on paper. Yes, it was Nick Paul. Who's me?
It was me.
No, it was he had a bunch of things on paper, and he pretended like to reveal.
Yes.
That they were pregnant or something, and it was blatantly obvious. What made me so happy in a place, Facebook being such a gullible place, and people getting misinformation all the time, all the comments were like, I think this is set up, and it made me so happy that people were able to figure out that this is
they know
bupkis.
I hope one day a magician can get big on Instagram or Facebook and have other magicians respect the work they're doing on that. I don't know if it's possible. I really don't even know if there is a crossover in that Venn diagram.
These
guys
money,
are hustling, and that's great.
No, they were. I'm not discounting the work that they put in.
No,
because
not at
you
all.
You have to be putting out a video every single day. It's a lot of work.
Oh,
it's not anything I'm remotely interested in, but I'm not discounting the amount of work that goes into it. I just don't think it's real. It doesn't translate to stage in any way, shape, or form.
How many people do you think, though, hated Houdini at the time? Where they were like, oh,
yeah.
Another show at the Orpheum. God, that guy.
Well, other magicians would show up when he was doing a stunt publicly. They would show up and hand out their flyers.
Yeah.
And people would go to see that person's show.
They were probably
so
like,
it's the
that's
same
not
thing.
Magic. That's an escape.
It's analog.
I'm not saying that Jabrizi is the next Houdini.
Wait, stop. Let's stop it. The
Robert
whole point
Ramirez
is to stop picking on Jabrizi. Make Julius Dean the new Jabrizi. Pick on him, everybody. Trying to change.
I'm not picking on anybody. Don't sue me. This is my podcast. These are just...
Parody,
they legally
parody,
can
all
have
joke.
Their own opinions. Me, yeah. I love everybody. We throw shade lovingly on everybody. Please don't sue me. I don't have money to give you. It's a pandemic. Okay, that's enough of us talking about nonsense.
Yeah.
Thanks for your night sweats. Thanks for coming on, Eric.
Thanks for having me, gentlemen.
Thanks for everything. You're just a good man. You're good. And I think Robert has a song to play you out.
I'm just playing us out. You keep going.
And we're talking, but it's getting quieter.
But the thing is, it's Zoom, so I need you just to
you're
play
right.
on your own, because then we're not going to hear it, because Zoom is terrible with audio.
We're going to be silent now, Robert. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Here we go. We had lots of fun, but now we're done. Nick, Eric, and I, we're going to go with our bros and maybe get a donut.
Oh, I'm literally about to make pie. I was hoping you were going to say pie. I'm not joking. I'm leaving my sound booth going to make pie right now.
You're going to make a pie?
Well, we made two pies. Now I'm making more pie because we still have crusts because it's Sunday. Why not go crazy?
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll hear about that pie next week.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcast. If you really like the show, you can donate a few bucks a month on our website, twomagiciansonemike.com, or become a monthly subscriber through our Patreon link. Thanks to all the people that support the show and keep it up and running. Be sure to follow us on the interwebs at @twomagiciansonemike. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.